I have just two very brief areas to touch on, Dr. Gray. Yesterday, previously Dr. Fraser took a stand and talked about her involvement in consulting with you during a latter aspect of the autopsy examination. You did actually consult with her in that regard, right?
Yes.
Okay. By the time you had completed your initial autopsy, you had not made any findings of any kind of sexual assault on examination of Cernover's body, correct?
That's correct.
And you did not specifically, as a medical examiner, contact Dr. Lori Fraser and ask her to come in and consult with you, correct?
No, that was not at my request.
Right. In any event, Dr. Fraser was called in by another entity, came in with her magnifying scope and did her examinations after you had completed your initial autopsy, correct?
Yes.
The question that I have, Doctor, that I posed to Dr. Fraser, I'd like to repose to you, and that is, basically, you are an expert when it comes to assessing lividity in deceased people, correct?
That's something that I have to do on a daily basis, yes.
In this case, Doctor, we all know that when Cernover's body was found in the shower, she was face down, correct?
Yes.
And your office of medical examiner, investigator, Brent Marchand, had related that information to you, correct?
Yes.
So, naturally, based on what you said earlier today on direct examination, you would expect that if she died or was placed in a shower near death, that the blood would pool from the back of her body to the front, correct?
Right. The lividity pattern would be across the front of her body.
In that regard, Doctor, the genital area of Cernover would be near that tile floor that she was laying on, correct?
Yes, that would be another area of the body that was dependent or downwards.
Right. So in that regard, what I'm getting at is the blood pooling or blood settling into those genital tissues. My specific question is, when you looked again at Cernover's body after you had completed your initial autopsy examination, was that discoloration or that darkening in those tissues in the vaginal area consistent with blood pooling that you've seen in the past?
What was documented with the microscope exam that Dr. Fraser did were what were called petechial hemorrhages, the more fine pinpoint hemorrhages around her urethra and on her hymen. That pattern of petechial hemorrhage is not consistent with lividity. That would tend to be a more diffuse and suffused appearance.
Could blood pooling or lividity account for that kind of discoloration or basically mimic a bruise in those tissues?
Potentially, but it did not appear to me from what I saw to be vivid.
But it could be.
Potentially, yes.
Okay, the second area of focus here, Dr. Gray, just so you've made an abundantly clear record on this point, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse here, but your memory is that you were not present at the scene where Cernover's body was found in that basement in the shower, correct?
That is correct.
And so even though Brent Marchand's report of investigation indicates you had been, that's likely in your indication, a typographic error of some sort?
That is correct.
When you look at Mr. Marchand's report of investigation, do you have that before you, Doctor?
I do.
You rely on information contained in that report of investigation during your autopsy examination, correct?
Yes, it provides the background information in which I walk into that autopsy.
Correct. In that regard, I note under the scene heading that there's an entry for body temperature that's been left blank. Do you see that?
Yes.
Is body temperature something you would have liked to have had during your autopsy in this case?
It's another piece of information that can be used to estimate time of death. So if it was available, it would be information that I would be cognizant of and be and take consideration of. Yes.
And had you been at the scene, hands-on as a medical examiner, you would have taken the body temperature, correct?
Hopefully I would have remembered to say, hey, let's put a thermometer and see what the temperature is, yes.
Likewise, there's a heading for ambient room temperature that is also blank on Mr. Marchand's report. You see that?
Yes.
Again, information you'd like to have in this report and in your investigation when determining time of death.
Yes, again, another piece of information that can be put into that estimation process.
You testified this morning, Doctor, during direct examination, that when the medical examiner assistant, Brent Marchand, arrives, he notes in his report that lividity had become fixed, correct?
Yes.
And that rigor had become hard, correct?
Yes.
And that based on those findings, the opinion you expressed this morning is that death could have happened anywhere within a 12-hour period from Mr. Marchand making those findings.
No, I think what I said was at least 12 hours.
At least 12 hours. So you're aware chronologically, are you not, Doctor, that Brent Marchand initially was called out on the evening of April 1st, but law enforcement turned him away and he didn't come back to the scene until 5 o'clock on April 2nd.
The early morning hours of the 2nd, that is correct.
So if we look at least 12 hours prior to 5:30 a.m. on April 2nd, that would take us back to 5:30 p.m. on April the 1st.
Correct.
So your window, Doctor, with regard to time of death is what exactly in this case?
Again, as I said, there is no deathometer. I cannot give you a scientific determination of time of death. The most accurate thing is sometime between when she was last seen alive and when she is found dead. The physical findings on the body documented by my investigator certainly indicate that she's been dead probably at least 12 hours. Could she have been dead a day and a half? Yes, that's possible. I'm not going to be able to tell you with any certainty exactly when this child died.
Understood. I appreciate that. Now, you said that part of what you take into account when you look at the time of death calculation are circumstances at the scene, perhaps, where the body is found, correct?
Yes.
In this case, if you had information, Doctor, from a crime scene analyst that there was water in a shower and water up the shower walls, perhaps as much as a foot, would that have been relevant information for you to help you determine time of death?
Yes.
How so?
Remember that I said the things that we look at, the changes in the body that happen after death, how they develop, the time frame that they develop, are dependent on both factors unique or to the body itself, as well as environmental factors. If you say that someone has been placed in water or has water running over them that is cold, that will change how those postmortem changes develop in that body. So certainly evidence of somebody being wet would play, you'd have to think about that in coming to your determinations as to possible time of death.
What about the existence of water, Doctor, on a shower wall? perhaps up a foot from the base of that shower, the actual drops of water still on the wall, that indicate to you information pertinent to a time of death calculation?
No, that in and of itself probably wouldn't. That just tells me that water has been running over in that location, has spattered on the wall soon enough before its observation so that it hasn't evaporated and dried.
Exactly my point. Soon enough at the time of examination that it hasn't evaporated yet.
Water on the wall has not evaporated. Right?
Exactly. So let's assume, as Mr. Marchand testified, the room temperature was roughly 60 degrees down there when he came down. The existence of water droplets on the shower wall might be pretty significant when deciding a time of death or an actor interacting with the body relative to time of death.
Certainly the latter part of your supposition, that it would be very relevant. In terms of time of death, cold is going to retard or slow postmortem change. So if I know that the body's in a cold environment or it has water on it, it may make me say, oh, these changes may have taken longer to develop than normal.
You may have a moment. That's all I have, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll redirect, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, just briefly. So, Dr. Gray, let's just start there. If the evidence in this case has been that even when Mr. Marchand was there doing his evaluation at 5:30 or so in the morning on the 2nd of April, her coat is still wet, her clothing is still wet, and her hair is still wet, would that be information that would go along with what you said, that it may have been longer since death occurred?
Yes.
And explain that a little more.
Again, the postmortem changes, the development of stiffening of the muscles, development and fixation of settling of blood after death can be affected by temperature. Sure, you have a body in a warm temperature, or a person who's febrile before they die, their postmortem changes may be much more accelerated compared to someone who is not hot. Same thing, someone who is cold, those changes may take longer to develop, meaning a certain set of appearances in their postmortem changes may actually indicate a longer postmortem interval than one.
If the evidence in this case has been that the first EMTs to come into the scene felt her body, she was completely cold to the touch, they described that lividity is fixed and not moving at that stage, and that one of them tried to move one of her legs and it would not move independently of the rest of her body. And that was at 7:30 p.m. on the 1st of April. Would that contribute more information as to your opinion?
Yes, it certainly pushes things farther back than the minimum 12 hours that we were talking about from 5:30 on the morning of the 2nd.
Is there any way to establish a maximum amount of time going backwards?
Yes, if there were changes in the body that indicated this person was beginning to decompose, that would tell me, that's probably someone who's been dead at least 36 to 48 hours or longer. So yes, there are things which I could look at and say, this puts an outer limit in the past on the time of death.
Was there any evidence, as you did your evaluation, of decomposition of the
blood? No.
Let's go back to the genital injuries that you saw. You began to explain that the type of hemorrhage that you saw using the colposcope that Dr. Frazier brought over is not consistent with simply being caused by lead bleeding. Would you please explain that a little bit more?
If you look at an area of lividity where the blood has settled with gravity after death, generally it tends to be very monotonous, even. Rarely you may see in parts of the body that are even lower than the majority. So let's say somebody's died with their arm hanging off the edge of the bed. That settling of blood may create enough pressure that blood vessels actually rupture. And then you can see a spotty pattern in that area of suffusion or lividity. That spotty pattern, though, is very irregular. Size of the dots is quite variable. Their shape is quite variable. And it's very different from the very fine pinpoint hemorrhages that I saw under the colposcope in her genitalary.
So overall, what was your opinion as to whether those genital injuries were real and pre-mortem versus post-mortem caused solely by the settling of blood?
From what I saw, I thought that those were actual injuries that occurred while she was alive and were not artifacts of the dead.
Just a couple more questions. Do you use the colposcope that Dr. Frazier described
in
a regular autopsy?
No, not routinely.
Would you consider Dr. Frazier to be an expert in identification of those kinds of injuries?
Yes, she certainly has much more experience than I do looking at suspected abuse injuries in children with that instrument.
In retrospect, was it helpful to have her be involved in this whole process?
Yes.
That's all.
So again, Mr. Marchant is doing his scene investigation for your office around 5:30 in the morning on April 2nd, right?
Correct.
So if we turn the clock back to your 36-hour window, that would be 5:30 p.m. on March 31st.
Yes.
So if the body had been in that shower since 5:30 p.m. on March 31st, you would expect it would start seeing some signs of decomposition by the time Mr. Marchant is on scene.
If it was not in a cold environment, yes. I mean, if this is a body that had been in summer heat for 36 hours, I would have seen definite decomposition.
Right. Under these conditions, in a shower stall with roughly 60-degree temperatures, what are we talking about in terms of decomposition after 36 hours?
In a person who is not infected or have infection before they die, if you're in a cool, moist environment like that, could it be out to 3 days, 4 days?
Possible.
And again, it's so variable. I hate to say, I know it has to be X versus Y. There is so much variability, it's very difficult.
After 36 hours or slightly more, with the body in that position, in that shower, would we have some odor at that point?
You might begin to smell something, yes. One of the things I saw at the examination is she did have a little fecal evacuation. So you might have been able to smell that coming off of the body by itself.
Anything else by way of odor?
Pardon me?
Anything else by way of odor we would
No,
expect?
I mean, certainly I would... I did not see anything internally that indicated the organs were breaking down. I have no recollection of saying, wow, that's stinky, what's going on?